Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Mariota throwing it open is Terry McLaurin. They wanted the deep shot. They got it. And touchdown, Washington.
More on Terry McLaurin in just a minute. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan, brought to you by the law firm Kondori & Murad. Our exclusive sponsor will take care of all of your needs. Last will and testament, living trust, medical power of attorney, whatever you got. Schedule a consultation with their attorneys today. You can do that at kmlawyers.com, and be sure to tell them we sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, I dropped into Glory Days last night to pick up a salad.
Good
I know.
For you, buddy.
There's been a lot of talk about salads on the show lately.
Yeah. Again, proud of you. It ain't fun because you're at Glory Days. You know what they offer there at Glory Days?
Wings.
Yeah. They got. Remember, we were going to do chicken tendies and tutties for Sam Howell when he played well?
I could tell you more stuff they offer.
Yeah.
Cheese fries.
Cheese fries. It's right on the fries.
Meatloaf.
Yep.
Ribs.
Ribs. Ribs.
You want any other options, or is that good?
No, if you've got more, say more.
We could keep going. Chocolate lava cake? You ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have.
You ever heard of Luke McCaffrey touchdowns and chocolate lava cake? Anyway, I stop in, I scoop a salad, I'm bringing it home. But while I go in last night at the bar, there were these two Detroit Tigers fans.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to say, well, Grant, you weren't in Detroit. You were in Virginia, and you'd be right about that. But they live here, and they were in their Tigers gear, and they were watching the Tigers-Guardians game. For those of you that don't follow Major League Baseball that closely when the Nats aren't in the mix, just know that the Cleveland baseball outfit is on the precipice of the greatest comeback in the history of Major League Baseball in terms of deficits to win a division. It's crazy what's happening in the AL Central. Cleveland was 15.5 games back of Detroit this summer. The Tigers have collapsed. The Guardians have lost two games in the last 3 weeks, and they're playing right now. Cleveland swept them within the last week and is now playing them and beating them in two straight nights. So they're just hard charging. So anyways, these two Tigers fans last night, early in this game, which their team would eventually lose, are watching this game, and they're living and dying with every pitch as I'm standing at the bar waiting for my takeout order. And I mean every single pitch, it's just excruciating. It looks like me for a Nats Game 5 in the division series against the Dodgers or something.
Yeah.
And I am reminded of just how unbelievable postseason baseball can be, how electric and fun this week can be. You know, last night the Mets, who I'm rooting very, very hard against to miss the playoffs, they lose their game. But they get the help that one game back Cincinnati also lost, one game back Arizona also lost. But just think about being a fan of one of those teams where the Mets, the Diamondbacks, the Reds are all vying for the same wild card spot. We had Will Fleming on yesterday. If you missed the interview, you can go grab it when we're done today, wherever you get your audio. But he's the voice of the Boston Red Sox on the radio. Paul Taboni, the new Nats president of baseball operations, is coming over from Boston. So we had him on to talk about their new executive and this rocket ship superstar trajectory that he's on. And at 35, how in the heck he's running a baseball operation. But he was talking about how cool it was. He was getting ready to watch Scherzer and
Crochet, I think.
Garrett Crochet last night for Boston, yeah. And they were going to go head-to-head, and Boston could still win the division, or they could finish the number two wild card or the number one wild card, or they could miss the playoffs altogether, basically, in the last 5 days. And there's six or seven markets around the country where this is happening, and I was just reminded last night, it has been so many years since 2019 and so long, but never forget how fun it can be.
Yep.
Important end of season baseball, there's not much like it. Night in and night out, there's no other sport that does that. Like, you're every night for 2 weeks at the end of the year in a playoff push, your game and someone else's game matters. It's just so different, man.
So I will fully admit this, and I think it's part of its human nature, and I think I'm subject to it as well. When you're in the throes of this, like, queasy stomach, this is taking years off my life, every close pitch that's ruled against you is an apocalypse, or every time the puck is in, you know, the Capitals' defensive end in the middle of the second round, I am losing my mind and again, like, freaking out, and I'm miserable to be around. I'm miserable. And then they lose both, you know, which happened to both franchises a whole bunch. I'm sitting there going, I just can't do that. Now that I've been far enough removed from it, especially in the baseball case, it's strange how much I miss it. You're 100% right. Like, when you're in it, you don't understand, Ed Helms style, that these are the good old days, so to speak. Like, having something meaningful to play for at all times is such a privilege. But, you know, so I guess I'm saying I've taken it for granted at times that, like, that agony is actually amazing because it means it matters, right? There's no agony for a Paul DeJong at bat with two games to go. There's not. Sorry. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's where we are. I miss that so damn
well. Just
much.
Turn on the TV and watch one of these environments if you don't know what I'm talking about. In Seattle, where the Mariners clinched a division, another team that came from behind with a hard stretch, just hard charging finish. Cal Raleigh last night hit his 60th.
It's a casual 60 bolts for a catcher, you know.
60th home run as they clinched the division. And check out the environment in the ballpark. Yeah. Or Kyle Schwarber last night hit two homers in Philly. 55 and 56 for him on the year. You know, former Nats great, Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
By the way, he gives the Nats credit for saving his career. I talked to him at the All-Star game, and he's such a good dude. We were chilling for like 5 minutes right in the dugout, and he's like, you know, when I went to Washington, if you remember, he got like a small deal.
It wasn't a huge contract, no.
Absolutely. He's like, the whole reason I went there was I thought if I could get with Kevin Long. He's like, I could save my career and start hitting the ball in the air and hit more home runs. And, you know, that was the plan. Sure enough, it happened. Certainly did. He's still with Kevin Long now in Philly, hitting 56 home runs, by the way.
Seems to have worked out. That's a good match. Yeah, for sure.
But he hit two. So now you've got Raleigh with 60. You've got Schwarbs with 56. Shohei's got 53 bombs. And Judge, back-to-back, first time since Babe Ruth, I think, 50 homer seasons. He hit 51 last night. We may end up with Eugenio Suarez getting to 50 as well. We would have five different guys do that. Cal Ripken Jr. is joining the show next hour. I want to ask him about that. But, you know, just the power display in baseball this year is insanity. But Raleigh might hit 62 bolts as a catcher.
At the risk of everybody, listen, eat your salad real quick. Just Grant and I are talking about meaningful baseball for 1 second. Everyone is going to be fine. I promise you we have Washington football talk in like 7 seconds. Is it crazy to you that only four guys ever have four 50-homer seasons? Is that nuts to you? The Judge became the fourth?
How many?
Only four guys have four 50-homer seasons, 50-homer-plus seasons. McGuire, Sosa, Ruth, and Judge.
I was going to say, I don't even know if good. Okay, Ruth would have been the third. No, that doesn't surprise. I mean, really? 50.
That blew me away.
So many home runs.
I'm very aware, but dude, if you had 50 home runs a year for 10 years, you got 500, and you're 100 shy of the record.
I understand, but 50 in a season four times.
Totally.
Like, nobody hits 50. That's like saying, is it surprising you there's only a couple people in the world that have $800 billion? Like, that's so much money.
Well, I understand that, but like Greg Vaughn hit 50 bombs. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Four times, though?
But four times is a lot. I'm not saying it's a few times.
Yeah.
I'm saying there's that he became the fourth. There were three until last night.
Yeah.
Only three guys have ever done that. I thought it would have been like six.
Okay. Has CK come in to yell at us yet, or can I bring up one more thing?
I haven't seen him.
Okay.
I haven't seen him. The first non-Yankee to hit 60 in the AL. First non-Yankee to hit 60 in the AL in that stupid ball. It's not stupid. It's actually a gorgeous ballpark. But in a pitcher-friendly ballpark, the large tookus, the big dumper. It's an incredible story. Back to you, Greg. That's it. That's all I have. That's it.
No, I have two more things.
So that's it.
The stones on this guy. Okay, now, Darris, if CK comes running down the hall, you just tell me. Number one, I want to bring up that the dude that caught Cal Raleigh's home run last night,
yep,
gave it to a kid right after catching it. Did he know what he had just done? Did he know what he had gotten?
I have to say no.
He was bestowed the 60th home run, the record home run for a catcher. It's the most ever by a Mariners player. I mean, at the minimum, you're parlaying that into pictures and autographs and a hang with Cal Raleigh and maybe some season tickets next year or something. You're just taking that ball and whipping around and going, here, kid. Now, if you catch a ball and you're not that lady in Philadelphia who chases a guy down to steal a ball from a kid because you're a terrible person, the normal thing to do is to give it to your kid. That is a very common, normal thing. But when you catch a historical home run, a home run with great value monetarily, I think it's very reasonable if you're escorted out of there, you just go, bro, this is Cal Raleigh's 60th. This is a keeper here.
I'm going to hang on to this one until someone gives me money for it.
So I just have to imagine he got caught up in the moment. He caught the ball. He's giddy. He's going crazy. The kid's right there, and he gives the kid the ball and immediately goes, whoopsie. You can't ask for it back at that point.
No, there's no give you backsies.
I don't know if the Mariners do something for him. They probably should. Generally, we're in the business now where publicly when someone does the right thing, you kind of take care of them for doing it. So maybe it's a picture with and a signed bat from Cal Raleigh and, like, tickets to a Division Series game or something. But I promise you he'd have done a little better in the transaction if he didn't hand that ball out.
Yeah, I want. You know what I want is the thousands of dollars. I would do that. I know a lot of people are like, well, the memorabilia, the memory. I already have the memory. I caught it. I got my picture taken with whoever. Auction. Let's have an auction. And what I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not, that sometimes when you don't give the ball back, I'm not talking about to a kid, but like, you know, they're like, hey, it's a significant home run for name that guy. Like,
this is Danny Ruiz 500.
Yeah. If you don't give it back, and they're like, well, how about a bat? How about a signed bat? How about a picture with old Randy Duhier? If you don't do it, they won't authenticate it or some kind of – I've heard, like, there's pressure to do that. And I'm like, that's the only thing I'd be nervous about because I want my money. Like,
what did you do for the guy that caught your 30th home run at GW?
I said, thanks for go fetching the ball, pitcher, who's not pitching that day.
Right. I didn't know if you had to, you know, do like a meet and greet or take them to CC's Pizza or something like that.
I didn't get to keep any of them. Even my first one, I never got to keep them.
That's tough.
There's a ball budget.
So here will be my last one then. This was the other thing.
Okay.
You ever have a take where you know you're wrong? You just know it in your core that you're wrong.
Man, can I pause for one second? Who are you talking to?
But you can't shake it.
Yeah.
Here's my thing that I'm wrong about that I can't shake. I think I'd vote for Cal Raleigh for MVP. It should be Aaron Judge. I believe that. Aaron Judge has had a better season than Cal Raleigh. And the MVP award is basically most outstanding offensive player, comma, like with value for a winner worked into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare the two seasons of Judge and Raleigh, it's not particularly close. Raleigh's hit more home runs for sure, but like Judge, it's a .325 average. It's an all-time season. It's a ridiculous year. He missed a week and a half or so, so he's played in a handful fewer games. But my logic is Raleigh's an outstanding catcher, really tough defensive position, did something that no one's done at the spot, and without him, the Mariners don't win the division. And I think that you can kind of vacuum seal that, and I don't have to feel bad about voting him MVP if I have a vote. I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. But I can also acknowledge that Judge is probably more deserving, having had a better year. But it's one of those things where, like someone said to me last night, I was jokingly, MVP, MVP on Twitter after Raleigh's home run. Someone's like, Judge is the MVP. And I started to respond to them, and I was like, actually, they're so right. Like, what am I supposed to say to this?
Yeah.
I'm just going to stick with my incorrect thing and do it because it's also right. It's just a little bit less right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not egregious. I mean, I've got a million egregious takes. A million that I know objectively I'm the alien, I'm the weird one, I'm shaking my fist at the ocean. But yeah, I totally relate to that. It's not as crazy as you think either. It's not as if it's like you're voting, I don't know, Julio Rodriguez, his teammate, the MVP. You know what I mean? Like, that's a reasonable MVP, a catcher hitting 60 bombs. Now, ignore what he's done since the middle of July, where he's fallen off in a lot of areas, not in home run division. You have to ignore certain things. We love the new thing.
Whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, his power and the way he's driven in runs and hit home runs down the stretch is why they've overtaken the Astros in the division.
It's a big part of it.
So I would say the stretch run is a plus, not a minus for him. Like, sure, there are areas where his average and some things have come down, but they quite literally this month don't overtake their opponent without his month to win the division. That's why I kind of put him in there. The Yankees probably aren't going to win their division. Now, I'm not going to hold that against Judge per se, but I think he can be a nice bonus for Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, his September, which we're in right now, has been awesome. His July and August sub-200 hitter, mid-sevens OPS, you know, if we're doing wire-to-wire. But again, I'm not criticizing you. My point is,
yeah,
he would not get my vote for MVP. But we learned this in football. We learned it in basketball. There were years that Michael Jordan didn't win the MVP. Absurd. Patently absurd. Ridiculous. Yep. We just don't like giving it to the same guy who's a machine. The machine is Aaron Judge. Or to me, it should be between him and Ohtani every year. Did Ohtani hit? Did Ohtani pitch? Then he starts at number one, and someone's got to do something remarkable to overtake him, and Judge did.
Well, then you're really going to hate my NL take, right? Although I guess Ohtani didn't pitch a ton this year, so maybe you're okay with it. Kyle Schwarber should win the MVP award in the National League,
oh,
not Ohtani.
Man, here we go.
Now, Ohtani pitched some, but this was not your two-way unbelievable. Like, last year, he didn't pitch at all, but he still should have run away with MVP because he went 50-50. I mean, he was just like, who is this robot and why is he choosing to play baseball? This year, Kyle Schwarber's home runs and runs batted in for a Phillies team that's run away with the East. I'm sorry. Kyle Schwarber is going to be my MVP in the NL. Again, it's going to be a little bit hot because his name's not Shohei Ohtani and he's the only guy allowed to win the award anymore. But if Shohei was a two-wayer all year long, if he piled up innings, if he was a dynamite pitcher, then sure, I'm with you. No one should ever have a chance. But this is not one of those years.
47 innings is enough for me. Again, it's so beyond remarkable that 47 innings of a sub-3 ERA to go with a juggernaut offensive season as he always had, that's the MVP. It's too remarkable not to appreciate it. Like, if that dude does both, and if he takes the mound in a non-position player pitching situation, more than one cursory pitch, he's the MVP as far as I'm concerned. I understand your point, but I need everyone to I need when he's done, everyone to go, okay, that's never happened before. And probably will never happen in our great, 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 great grandkids' lifetimes. Someone that is that remarkable at this. It's like being the quarterback and also a linebacker and racking up in, you know, being one of the league leaders in tackles and like forced fumbles while being one of the best throwers of the football there is.
He's going to win it. I got no problem with that. It'll be his fourth MVP. We're just now in a world where every year he's going to win it until he's not doing both things. And by the way, the year he didn't do either, both things, he also won the award.
He
was that good of a hitter. But I'm just saying that while it's more right than Schwarber, in a world where maybe it's fatigue or whatever, I think Kyle Schwarber was so valuable to the Phillies this year.
There's no doubt about it.
That one's also right. It might just be a little bit less right. All right, that was our Terry McLaurin discussion.
Ryan, label it as Terry McLaurin discussion in the podcast.
If anyone asks, we just talked about Terry McLaurin. We swear we did. Next, though, I do want to talk football, if that's okay with everyone. All you baseball marks out there are going to be salty. We're going to go around the horn ahead of week 4 in the NFL. Our first look at matchups, hit the headlines, what is on the line, and what coaches and quarterbacks are feeling the heat. We'll get to that next on G&D on the Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Football discussion on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with a nice week 4 matchup between the Commanders and the Falcons. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. I just FaceTimed the fam during the break and was talking with the kids, and I was showing them the beautiful facility where I am here in Annapolis, water all around me. I've got a little balcony here where I'm doing the show. And my son goes, "You have a pool in your backyard?" He thinks I'm like at some hotel with a pool.
Right, in like, your backyard. It's like,
My backyard at my pool. Yeah, come on out. Throw your trunks on. Let's have a good old time.
Yeah, I think you know where your back, where dad's backyard is, buddy.
I got the sense that they thought I was on a trip.
Yeah.
They think I'm out of town, which technically I am. Annapolis is, you know, it's not in Springfield or Lorton. But, yeah, so I think they think I'm like in – they came to West Palm Beach for a few days, and we got a Airbnb that had a pool and stuff. So maybe they think when you go out of town, you get a pool in your backyard.
You just get one. Yeah. I mean, every time they see dad not at home, there's a body of water next to you by association. I get it.
That's what they're doing. All right, let's get ready for week four around the NFL. Who's feeling the heat is where we can start. I'll tell you that the first coach to be fired odds are tightening here. They're Tennessee tightening.
They're tightening.
Literally and figuratively.
Tighten
so you got Mike McDaniel minus 150 offshore, and then Brian Callahan plus 150 of the Titans. And then Dable. Brian Dable at 3-1, Raheem Morris at 9-1. So I can't see Raheem getting fired anytime, really at all this season, but certainly in the weeks ahead. Same with Dave Canales, Carolina, D'Amico Ryans, Houston, the guys that are next on this list. To me, McDaniel in Miami makes some sense. Callahan in Tennessee I still think is an aggressive timeline in year two, but I guess it's possible if they go like 0-5, 0-6 or something like that. But those two guys being the top two over Brian Daboll is interesting because Daboll's already benched a quarterback. There are at least reports that maybe he's feeling the heat from ownership, and that's why he didn't wait a week to make the quarterback change. Otherwise, Danny, why are you starting Dart this week against undefeated L.A., a really good Chargers defense? You could have just waited one more week, one more loss, and then started him at home against the Saints, or I guess in the Superdome, wherever they are.
Yeah, that says to me that the heat is on. Does that make sense? Like, in other words, the pressure is already mounting. Like, three bad showings. I mean, one decent one, I guess, where they played competitive. But for the most part, you're going, this, they don't belong. And what's going on here? Hey, look, we got a new toy. Everyone get excited. Isn't this interesting? It's Jackson Dart time. That tells me that they couldn't afford to wait for a soft landing spot. They had to do it right now.
So I don't even know if this is fair or not, because it's one terrible game. It's a couple of not ideal games. But the quarterback feeling the most heat this week, fair or not, is Michael Penix of the Falcons.
Yeah.
Because they got shut out 30-0, and because he has the less than ideal situation of having a quality backup behind him, a veteran who at one point last year before injury, Kirk Cousins was putting up some pretty gaudy numbers. I think they will and should, for the record, stick with Michael Penix. You got to give him a lengthy leash here. He's very, very young. It would probably be a detriment to his development if you sat him down early this season. But Penix is the guy of all the quarterbacks in the league that might need the biggest week just to fend off some of the wolves at the door here.
That's a good one. I got Bo Nix in there as well, but it's a similar sort of state of the union, right? You look at Denver, they're 1-2 in a really, really tough division. Had a game in hand that they probably should have been able to close out and win against the Chargers, but they got Herberted. But he hasn't played particularly well just yet. That was part of the calculus, I guess, talking about Denver maybe being the team to overtake Kansas City or at least give them a threat or at least bother them. And it hasn't happened just yet. Defensively, they're still very good, and Nix hasn't clicked in year two with Sean Payton and company. But I think Penix is the leader in the clubhouse there because, you know, you have a $40 million guy that you benched to go to you, and it hasn't gone very well to this point this season. And I thought it would, frankly. I saw enough last year to go, hey, I think they got something here. Because maybe I was a fan of him already, and it's a little bit of confirmation bias. But I thought they would hit the ground running a little bit better than they have to start the season, and they have not.
You know what my favorite thing about Ryan is, the most adorable thing is? Every single time my computer dies, which is at least once a show, because I have a bad wire, a bad computer, or both, I'm not sure.
Yep.
He immediately texts me within a split, like within 1 second, to tell me my camera's off. Never, ever considering the possibility that my computer died and I've got to, you know, recorrect or do some other. He's like, your computer died. I'm like, remember the problem yesterday and the day before? And it's still that, man. It's still that.
I feel bad. I actually was trying to help, and I told him that your camera went away.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so he's catching a little shrappy there. But that's the only time he talks to us is basically when our camera's not on.
I got a text from him for the first time in 3 days. And so I was like, oh, what is this? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, what was the last text, camera?
It says your camera's off. Yeah, 4 days ago, he says, can you turn your camera on, please?
Camera, please, yeah. Can you hop in the stream?
Corporate Clarion.
Corporate Clarion, man. Single note.
All right, so we talked about Thursday night football a little bit already. We got NFC West action tonight. Seahawks, Cardinals, both 2-1. Someone's going to be sitting pretty going into week 5. Getting into the Sunday slate, I'm very interested in this Vikings-Steelers game. Here's why. If Carson Wentz plays well, he did this past week, but it couldn't have been an easier 72 and sunny situation. Two defensive touchdowns, blowing a team out.
Yep.
Game script is on your side. They score 48 points, and some of those are on defense and special teams, as I mentioned. So it was an easy day for Carson Wentz. But if you could play the Steelers, not like their defense has been a juggernaut early this year, you get a quality win on the road in Pittsburgh, playing well. Now we're talking about him leading Minnesota to 2-0. The numbers are going to be on his side. There's going to be a groundswell to have him start even when J.J. McCarthy's back.
And the other side of the ball, for Pittsburgh, if they go 3-1 with the benefit of getting Carson Wentz, if you can't just run the ball down some team's throat, Cincinnati was hapless last week. Jordan Mason ran for .116. You and I could have run for 100 yards against that defense, which is woeful. If Pittsburgh wins, just a Pittsburgh-style thing, you look up through a quarter of the season, roughly, now that there's 17 games, they'll be 3-1. Without having much good on offense, with their defense having given up a bleep ton of points to the Jets and having looked mediocre at times, here they will be in position to be a threat in the AFC North for the millionth straight year.
Yeah, I don't know how much people are up on what's going on with Pittsburgh's offense and yardage so far this season, but they are bottom three in the NFL in what is called yard margin. So, like, how many yards you gain and your opponents gain. I mean, games are being dictated to them. They are getting outgained massively. There are 29 teams in the NFL better than them in that area right now. So it's not like it's been pretty. I mean, they've been able to win two games. I give Rodgers credit for that. But they need to get a lot more consistent really, really quickly. And they're going to have a struggle running the football all year, too, it would appear, based on the first three games of the season. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Bills should have no problems with the Saints. This could be your most lopsided game of the early part of the year. 3-0 Buffalo hosting 0-3 New Orleans. It's kind of a matter of how long until they go to shuck and they bench Rattler at this point.
Buffalo's excellent. New Orleans is not. I think one team is a potential Super Bowl champ. The other is probably picking first, in my view. I think New Orleans, you know, is just sort of waiting as long as they can to pull that lever that you just mentioned. There's not much exciting there. I think they should already be exploring trades for shipping Alvin Kamara out of town to a contender. He could really help somebody as a, you know, do-everything Swiss Army knife back that's great out of the backfield, great at catching passes. Having a guy like that on a team that's going to win two or three games doesn't really help you. They're the largest dog of the week. I think it's 15.5, depends on your book. But my goodness gracious, Buffalo just catching a break there after having a couple of tough games in a row.
Browns are 2-1 at home, trying to get to 3-1 against the Browns. It's hard to imagine Cleveland would knock off Green Bay and Detroit in consecutive weeks. This is one of those survivor spots where I think you roll with Detroit because the Browns just had their gasp, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They just stole the game they weren't supposed to. They did it at home a little easier than doing it on the road, oh, by the way. But I will say, I'm back on the Lions in a big way. Week one, they got blown out by the Packers. Their offense looked like just terrible, I guess, to say a word I'm allowed to say.
Yep.
And then, you know, you start asking questions. Okay, Ben Johnson's gone. What's it going to look like? Their O-line's not quite on the same level personnel-wise. Well, two wins and two strong performances since. I thought Goff was really fantastic in primetime this past week. Made a big-time money throw to win that football game on fourth down to Amon-Ra St. Brown. So I'm in on Detroit. You know, it looks like they are offensively in a very, very good spot, even without Ben Johnson alert.
470 yards of offense average over the past couple of weeks as they've scored 90 points. Yeah, they're doing something right there for sure against pretty decent opponents defensively, too. I mean, I don't think Chicago's good, and, you know, the Ravens have certainly leaked here early on, but still, the way they move the football, the way they've run it, since that week one aberration, again, we always do this, right? We see a week one result, and we go, oh, my God, look at X. That's the way it is. And now we slowly have deposits in a counter direction. I think Detroit will be just fine and dandy. Cleveland's defense is good. Now, you wouldn't know it all the time. They just shoved it on Green Bay, but because their offense does them no favors and they've been on the field a whole bunch of times and just hasn't looked great through a handful of weeks. But that's the only way they're going to stay in the game is if they muck it up somehow. But I think Detroit is too good.
What if the Texans lose to the Titans? 1 o'clock game in Houston. They're both 0-3. The Texans correctly are favored in this game, but they lose 14-9 to the Rams, can't move the ball. They lose 20-19 to the Bucs, last-minute drive by Tampa. Then they drop a 17-10 game to Jacksonville. They absolutely should have won. They should be 2-1 right now. They could be 3-0. Instead, they are 0-3. The C.J. Stroud sophomore slump has gone into his junior season, so I don't know what we call that. DeMeco Ryans has fired coordinators, and they still can't get this thing figured out. You get a gift-wrapped matchup here with the Titans, but you got to take advantage.
Yeah, they're minus 43 through 3 weeks. Tells you everything you need to know, talking about Tennessee, right? They are not competitive at this stage, and there's not much going right. It's a bummer because I still like Cam Ward an awful lot, but you know what's he supposed to do? He's treading water as best he can, trying to survive, only completing 54% of his passes. Nothing prolific happening there. They've got a couple things that are interesting. Okonkwo and Tony Pollard is in the backfield. Again, that's not exciting to people, but they're just pedestrian. They're bad. Houston, if they don't get off the schneid this week, when is it ever going to happen for them? They are probably the most disappointing team in the NFL, I would say, at 0-3.
Panthers are in New England to take on the Patriots. So if New England is going to be the surprise AFC team that everybody kind of liked coming into the season after they spent a lot of money, if Mike Vrabel is going to be a Coach of the Year candidate who changes the culture in year one, this is a game you got to win. You got to get to 2-2. You can't be 1-3 with losses to teams like the Raiders and the Panthers and get to 9 or so wins or something. But if they're 2-2 through 4 games, you're positioned okay with a really easy schedule moving forward. For Carolina, they got right against Atlanta, 30-0 win. Pitch to shutout. This is a competitive defense. We talked earlier about the Chargers and the Giants. The Meadowlands is the site of 0-3 New York turning the reins over to Jackson Dart. I cannot wait to watch him. He was brilliant in the preseason. Danny, I think the insertion of Dart on offense just opens up their playbook. You know, Daboll in Buffalo with Josh Allen, a lot of design quarterback runs, especially down near the goal line in the red area, you know, low red zone. I could see Jackson Dart having 7, 8, 9 carries in this game, 5 or 6 by design, and them really trying to open their offense up that way.
I don't know what you do to this Chargers defense. You know, that's a tough landing spot for anybody making their first start, let alone a pretty inept Giants offense. I mean, to me, it's pretty simple. You've got to find a way, even though the other team is going to be focused on him, to get Malik Nabers the football. If you got to pop pass it, put him in motion, put him in the backfield, do something besides just have him line up on the left side and hope that he breaks and gets free of the double coverage, or hand it to Tyrone Tracy or Cam Scataboo, whoever the hell you got. I guess Tracy's injured. But this is a tough landing spot for anybody. It tells me that they couldn't wait for a good landing spot, that they had to do this now because I think the pressure is mounting. For the Chargers, they've been so unbelievably impressive to me. Offensively, we know it's the Justin Herbert story. He's been outstanding through 3 weeks. To me, though, the story is the defense, where they have been outstanding back-to-back weeks, less than 270 yards, total yards allowed on that defense as they've haven't forced a ton of turnovers, only 3 in that one game against the Raiders. But they are just so sound, and they are flying around making plays on the football.
3-0 against 3-0, the only game this week of undefeated clubs, Eagles, Bucks. And if you look at it, Tampa Bay historically over the last decade has
done well. Yep.
They have beat up on the Eagles at times. I mean, they definitely wear the pants in the relationship. Now, I'm not picking them this week, but if it happens, remember that Tampa Bay over the years has just brought their A game against Philly. The game is at Raymond James in Florida. Somebody's getting to 4-0. Someone's fallen to 3-1. That's your best game in terms of records on the slate. I think the overall most intriguing, maybe a matchup of the weekend, is the Ravens and the Chiefs. That's a 4:25 window game on Sunday. Kansas City could put together a signature effort and get their first quality win of the season. If they don't, though, man, the story is going to be they're 1-3. They can't beat the top teams in the AFC that they're playing. They've only beaten the Giants. The bloom is off the rose a little bit here with Mahomes and Reed and company, and an offense that's just a tough watch.
Be a similar story if Baltimore loses, right? They're 1-3. People thought before the season Super Bowl contender with a lone win over the Browns. So how's everything going for you guys as well? A lot on the line there. Real quick on that Eagles-Bucks game, that's two teams with similar pathologies where they haven't been great for 60 minutes in any of their 3 wins, but they have found a way to come back and win some of these one-score games with a little bit of magic. No Mike Evans, but I think Chris Godwin is coming back in that game. Something to monitor for the Bucs.
Tampa Bay is one of 3 teams in the NFL that has not turned the ball over yet. They've scored 23, 20, and 29 points in their win. And as you said, they have gone down the field for game-winning scores on their last 2 games against the Texans and the Jets. So it's not like they're pummeling bad teams, but they are doing enough. Baker Mayfield is playing his butt off. I mean, he's on a short list right now of the quarterbacks that are seeing the field the best, making the best decisions in the NFL early this season. Double play comes your way next. We're blitzing at the top of the hour. Danny is in D.C. I'm in Annapolis today. Grant and Danny with you live on The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Thank you for listening to the show on this Thursday. Coming your way on your flagship home for the Nats as they wind their season down in the Caps as they get ready to get going. Another preseason game for them today. The Double Play, driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. So, Danny, as you know, I'm sitting in Annapolis. I'm emceeing the Ripken charity event tonight for the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. So Cal Ripken Jr. is going to join us coming up within the next hour right here on The Fan. But, yeah, it's going to be cool. I got a script that I'm going to read. I think I'm going to skip, you know, basically stick directly to it is what I should say. I don't think I'm going to get cute. I don't think I'm going to try to pop the room or go off schedule. I think I'm going to play this very straight. If it's on the paper, I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
If it's not on the paper, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to get up and get down from the dais, and that'll be my role here tonight. This is not about your boy.
I think that's a smart way to do it. I remember I hosted the yearly athletic awards at the George Washington University sometime in the spring, and they gave me a very lengthy script. And I'm going, oh, okay, no problem. I'm happy to do it. And it was made pretty clear to me after a couple of minutes, like, yeah, the script. You know what I mean? This isn't a Will Ferrell movie. We're just going to leave the cameras going.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? We're not improv, and we're not going to try to remember what line we said. We're not doing Eddie Murphy, Nutty Professor type bit. The script. Let's make sure we read the words on the script. I'm like, happy to do it. Obviously, as you said, not about me.
Yeah, so I have no nerves of doing things like this generally, I will say, because I don't mind being on mic or being in front of people or whatever. That comes with the territory of the job that we have. But what I'll say is when you host events or do things, you want to do a good job, especially because they're important for a lot of people. And so there's some anxiety that comes along with that, I would say. Nervousness, if you want to call it that.
Yep.
But here is what I've experienced today is when you do something that is so buttoned up and just so well put together and everything is aligned in the way that makes it really easy for you to know what's going on to the minute. Okay, then this is going to happen. Then we're going to draw this. And the rundown is set up. Every little thing has been taken care of out here. I mean, you've done these things like I have where we go do these broadcasts somewhere. They've got the Ethernet set up. The IT person's waiting for me when I get in to get me on the computer. They got me a steak salad for lunch. Like, stuff I didn't ask for. Do you need this? Okay, we'll run to Walgreens and get that. When you deal with the Ripken Foundation, they do everything first class, and so it's been a really, really cool experience. But tonight's going to be awesome. For the young Orioles fan in me growing up, man, for Mike Elias and so many of the dignitaries, B.J. Suroff and people are going to be out here, I'm steamed. This is going to be a really good time.
That's awesome that B.J. Suroff's going to be there, by the way. You sleep that he was a catcher at North Carolina.
You sleep that he went 1-1
as a catcher. You sleep as a catcher at North Carolina.
Who drafted him?
Milwaukee Brewers?
That's a pull.
Yeah, there you go.
Attaboy.
It is fantastic. But you're right about that. When it's organized, like that's where my anxiety comes from. And you guys have seen it and made fun of me about stuff when events are happening, which is totally fine. But to me, if the logistical details, whatever they happen to be, are thought of and taken care of, walking up there and being like, you know, reading the words on the script or being on the mic, that's the easy part, which I know freaks a lot of people out. I think you have to be wired a little differently. you know, where you have to love the sound of your own voice and not be bothered by that kind of attention.
Right.
But as long as the logistics are sorted out, thought of, it makes the whole thing a lot less stressful and easy to do. I'm with you.
This is a confidence is preparation thing. You know, like, I don't have anything I can really prepare, but when everything's prepared for you, you're confident. And nobody is more about the laying out of rundown and run of show and having everything prepared just so than you are, which is always surprising to me. But, like, when we do these events, I think it's because you've just done very professional things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, right beforehand, still at this point of your career, you're, like, worried about 18 things. And you're just going to go up there and say funny things and people are going to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But you care so much about these little details every time.
Because I've seen it go awry. I've seen, you know, when nobody thinks about it. I'm just, for example, at a stand-up show, right, where who's introducing the first comic? And someone's like, oh, I thought you could do it. Well, if I'm headlining the show, that's actually a bad look. It taints the show because now they're sitting there doing is waiting for me again, presumably, or something else. Like, is there a house MC? Does that person bring the person up, or does the guy have to walk up and go, "Hi, everybody," and then start the show? That's harder for the comic. I've seen shows are like delicate little butterflies, right? A stiff breeze knocks it over. The wrong lighting, the wrong anything can ruin this very fickle, difficult thing to do anyway, right? And so yeah, I freak out about that kind of stuff. I tell you where it comes from. Honestly, is having run my own open mic like 20 years ago or whatever at Sapphire Cafe in Bethesda, which I don't think exists anymore. But I ran this weekly show. My buddy Rory Scovel and I ran this weekly show at Sapphire Cafe. And worrying about the order, booking the show, all the logistics and everything, like, just makes you realize when you're responsible for it, how much actually goes into it besides just talking into the microphone for your 8 minutes?
Well, I haven't asked about the God mic tonight or the flashlight in the back of the room. So I haven't gone through my Danny Hutier checklist yet.
You got to do it.
But maybe at some point I'll bring that up. Just make sure who's on the God mic, who's starting this thing, and when are they going to flash the flashlight? What is that, normally like 30 seconds left, or how do they do that?
Yeah, it depends. It depends on who you are. So for me, my jokes are a little bit longer than most. So I usually like a 3 to 5 minute light, meaning, hey, it's time to wrap up with 3 to 5 minutes remaining. Some people just want like just a minute left to go. Then it's like they'll finish whatever joke they're doing and get off. Just depends for me. I like usually like 3 to 5 minutes. Let me squeeze in a double play super quick, Darius. I've talked about this before, but when I'm left to my own devices, I made a quesadilla for myself a couple of weeks ago, and that was in my brain last night when it was, again, left to my own devices. The wife's putting the baby down. Other kids have already eaten. I made a buffalo chicken quesadilla. A buffalo chicken quesadilla. Where are you at? I know you don't do quesadillas, but where are you at on kind of the buffalo chicken as part of an ensemble that's not just like a chicken wing?
I have nothing but good things to say about buffalo chicken in all capacities.
It's not your normal Mexican-style quesadilla, right, where you got your cheese and your sour cream and everything going. I got to tell you, I used the buffalo sauce because we had like a quarter of that bottle left. I used that, heated up the chicken that was already previously used for something totally different.
Look at you cooking.
I'm a cook guy.
Your son was in studio the other, like 2 weeks ago, and yeah. I asked him, he was like opening up his lunch box because it was, for some reason, he was off school. I know that's weird.
It was a weekday.
Yeah. And so he was in studio and he had his lunch box and he like took out a homemade sandwich. And I was like, did dad make that or mom? He's like, dad's never cooked in his life.
Dad
like,
sucks at it.
Right in front of you.
Well, yeah, but it's totally correct. But here's the thing. My wife gets anxiety when I'm in the kitchen because she knows that, like, I don't see the mess or don't do it right or don't do it the way that she does it. And so that stress ruins everybody's time, including hers. And then when she's stressed out, it ruins my time. So, like, that's not good for anybody. So I generally don't do it. But so what I ended up doing, GP, and this is the point of the dude's story, is I put butter on both sides of the quesadilla. So that's what's going to go into the pan. But I cooked it in the same sort of buffalo chicken remnants, kind of that using the sauce because for chicken had already been cooked, so there's no salmonella type risk. But using that remnants of some butter and the wing sauce, that now coats my tortilla.
Mm.
I got to tell you, that was unbelievable. And I'm going, if I ate this at a restaurant, I would go, weird, but I loved it.
Wow.
It was that good.
Would you have ordered it again?
Yes. I would get that again.
So you're going to make it again. You've stumbled onto something.
I probably won't because of the size that my wife did when she saw that I hadn't cleaned up the pots and pans correctly.
Okay.
So I'll probably never step foot in the kitchen again because what I'm doing is wrong.
But what if you just made it again but then cleaned up the pots and pans correctly?
I'll try, but I think we both know that I can't do it right.
That's true. You whatever you do that. Won't be right. Yeah. Next time it'll be a different expectation for the pots and the pans altogether.
That's not where they go.
The Beltway Blitz on the Nats hiring a new executive. The Commanders getting ready for football is coming your way right at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.